I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. What happened to the big plans to reclaim and renew West Baltimore's Sandtown-Winchester neighborhood? 25 years and millions of dollars later, developer James Rouse's dream of a revitalized city neighborhood remains unfinished. And by one measure, the effort appears to be a failure. A report from the Justice Policy Institute found that Sandtown-Winchester had the highest rate of incarceration of any census tract in Maryland. Maryland taxpayers spend nearly $17 million each year to incarcerate residents from Sandtown. Plus, the study found that nearly half of the working-age population of Sandtown is unemployed, and one out of every three houses is vacant or abandoned. Is Sandtown a lost cause, or can these problems still be overcome? A closer look at Sandtown-Winchester on Midday after the news. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us and making Midday part of your day. In the second hour of the show, culture commentator Sherry Parks joins us again today to talk about that story you were just listening to on the NPR News Report, Cops and Guns, Citizens and Cameras, the Power of Citizen-Captured Video to Document the Use of Excessive Force by Police Officers, demonstrated in that South Carolina shooting that we'll talk about in the second hour of our show today. Two other things on Sherry's mind: children and poverty in the United States, a couple of interesting stories regarding children in poverty that we'll be talking about, and also the backlash against those religious freedom laws in Indiana and Arkansas that we heard so much about last week, worth a few minutes to talk about in our show in the second hour after the news at 1. A recent study by the Prison Policy Initiative and the Justice Policy Institute found that one-third of Maryland residents in state prison are from Baltimore City, and that Maryland taxpayers spend nearly $300 million a year to incarcerate those individuals. Within Baltimore City, the one neighborhood with the highest incarceration rate is Sandtown-Winchester. Maryland spends nearly $17 million each year to incarcerate 458 residents from Sandtown. Located west of downtown, Sandtown is a community that was devastated by blight and crime. Its population fell from about 40,000 in the 20th century to about 8,000 by the 1970s. And there have been attempts over the years to revitalize the community, most famously in the early 1990s, when the developer Jim Rouse and his Enterprise Foundation targeted Sandtown-Winchester, investing millions, building prefabricated brick row homes, and developing public-private partnerships with the city. Two and a half decades later, problems of crime and unemployment persist. An Able Foundation report found that the life expectancy in Sandtown is about 6 years shorter than the city average, only around 65 years in Sandtown compared to 71 years across the city. Nearly half of the working-age population of Sandtown is unemployed, and one out of every three houses is vacant or abandoned. We'll get to talk about Sandtown in this hour of the show, but we start with the report I mentioned and Mark Schindler. Mark Schindler is executive director of the Washington-based nonprofit, the Justice Policy Institute, or JPI, which does a lot of great work in this area. We've quoted them frequently. I've used them as a source in my column in The Sun over the years, and they've taken a hard look at criminal justice and incarceration in the state of Maryland. I want to welcome Mark Schindler back to our show to talk about the Sandtown Project. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for getting back with us. And the first question would be, did you target Sandtown-Winchester when you looked at this data, or were you just in general looking to see where Maryland taxpayers spent the most money for incarceration?
Sure. No, we were just looking generally at the link between where people who are incarcerated in Maryland prisons are from, and we looked at that statewide, but we took a particular look at Baltimore, and we found that, not surprisingly, because Baltimore tends to drive the prison population in Maryland, that fully half of Baltimore's communities, 25 of 55, spend $5 million or more to incarcerate people, and so they're we sort of group that into three categories: the high incarceration communities, the higher incarceration communities, that's 25 communities that spend $10 million or more, And then, as you referenced, Sandtown Winchester came up as the highest incarceration community, where in that particular community, we're spending about $17 million a year to incarcerate over 450 people. So Sandtown came up in those numbers. But I should say that many of the communities in Baltimore that are experiencing high rates of incarceration shared many of the same attributes, and that was high levels of unemployment, low levels of education, high levels of vacant and abandoned housing. So these were challenges and things that were consistent across those neighborhoods.
I note from your report that this seems to be a problem on the west side of the city, southwest Baltimore, for instance. There's problems in the Carrollton Ridge, Union Square, Penrose areas. The greater Rosemont census tract actually ranked third with 411 inmates, costing the state about $15.2 million per year. And then you get to Sandtown, where there is the highest rate, I guess, per capita, based on the number of residents in that area.
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct. So Sandtown showed the largest number, and these numbers could shift over time. What we did find, striking in this report was that as the number of people incarcerated from each community, as that went higher, what we saw is the other indicators essentially got worse as well. So we did see at least a link there. Whether that's causation or not is another question, but it is striking to know. And I think not too surprising that the most distressed and challenged communities are unfortunately resulting in the highest number of people entering into the justice system and ending up in state prison.
So that's what you would say is the takeaway from this. When you look at neighborhoods where the greatest number of incarcerated individuals come from, those who have committed crimes and gone to prison, they come from neighborhoods with all the same stress factors.
Well, that's correct. But I think that what that does is it really, I think, forces us to ask the question, are we getting the best bang for our buck? Are we spending our resources appropriately? And as you let off, it's not that a number of these communities haven't been the subject of efforts over the years to try to change the trajectory of those communities with some improvements. And I think the report that you referenced by the Able Foundation does show that, particularly with Sandtown Winchester. There have been improvements in that community. A number of outcomes have improved, with home ownership, median income, and educational outcomes, and crime has been lower in that particular neighborhood over the years. So I think it forces us to ask a couple of questions as we look at this data. For Sandtown, while we've been trying very hard to improve the conditions there and give folks a better chance to live safe and productive lives, we've also been spending an extraordinary amount of money on incarcerating people from that community. So could we do better? Because in some ways, I think what we've been doing is we've been investing in those communities in things that we think will help those communities, better housing, trying to improve the education, trying to create more job opportunities. But at the same time, we've been spending an extraordinary amount of money, $17 million a year, to incarcerate people. And I think that's actually hurting the community in its efforts to improve. We know from research over the years that's shown that there's essentially sort of a tipping point when it comes to incarceration in communities. So, of course, we're not saying that people who are convicted of very serious violent crimes necessarily should be in the community. I think for their safety and ours, there are people who I think we could generally agree need to be removed from the community for some period of time. But if you start to remove lots of people for what some would say are somewhat less serious crimes, or keep them out of the community for extraordinary lengths of time, then you're literally removing from the community a very substantial part of that population, which can destabilize the community. So when we're talking an overwhelming number of black males, these are fathers. These are now grandfathers. These are brothers. These are uncles, right? And so, they do things in the community that can be very positive. They coach sports. They can do things that are helpful. And when so many of those people are removed from the community, it can destabilize that community, and research has shown that.
Okay. Let's talk about this a little bit. Now, you're saying we have to be far more specific in who we incarcerate and for how long and for what offense. So
that's correct.
I don't know if your data provides, you know, who's serving a life sentence, who committed a murder, who committed a crime of violence versus a drug offense. But some people listening to this now, Mark, say, okay, $17 million a year, that's a lot of money, but we need to be safe. I mean, some of these people, they don't coach baseball. They commit crimes. So, I'm glad the state puts them away.
That's right. That's right. And I think there's, you know, we can agree on some of that, right? But I think, you know, there are a substantial number of people who are being incarcerated for drug offenses, right, which can in some ways be considered nonviolent offenses. There's also a substantial number of people in prison in Maryland who are going to prison for very long periods of time. So, you know, think about it this way, and this isn't specific to Sandtown, Winchester. I don't have the breakdown for those particular communities in terms of the breakdown of crime. But, for example, we do know today, roughly, there's just over 20,000 people in prison in Maryland. And about 3,000 of those people, some of whom are from Sandtown, Winchester, and the other communities in Baltimore that we looked at, have been there for substantial periods and are 50 years of age or older. Now, we know from the research that shows that as people get older, they're less likely to commit crime. They're less likely to reoffend. And that sort of makes sense, right? And you're mm-hmm. thinking about people who are 50 or older. They're just not out there running in the streets doing things that younger knuckleheads tend to do during their high crime years, right?
Right.
But because of changes that Maryland and other states put in place, largely in the 90s, we have a substantial number of people who are in prison in some ways in a geriatric situation, right? Older inmates, right? And so we're spending a very significant amount of money on those people. So when you think about the fact that on average to incarcerate one person in Maryland costs $37,000, that means that every year for those 3,000 or so people, we're spending $100 million to incarcerate them. And we also know that to incarcerate older people in prison actually costs more because their health care costs are higher,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
So, you know, let's just play that out a little bit, right? So if we have these people who spend an additional 5 years in prison, let's say from ages 50 to 55, we're spending $500 million to keep them behind bars, right? And so with some changes to sentencing laws, right, looking particularly at older folks, we could have an extraordinary amount of savings, right? So particularly if we cut that number just in half, right, if we said, you know, half of those people, let's say they committed such a violent crime that they deserve to stay away for a long time, even longer. So let's say we just said half of them. Over 5 years, we could be talking about a saving of $250 million. And I think that's a really interesting conversation to have in Annapolis to say, how would we spend that money differently? Could we invest in housing differently? Could we invest in education? Could we invest in workforce development? I think those are the types of conversations that we would encourage folks to have. And this data allows us to start to have that conversation. And I would say I'm encouraged right now because I think there's a possibility that we'll go down that road based on what will happen in Annapolis hopefully over the next couple of weeks. So there was legislation that was proposed, referred to as the Justice Reinvestment Coordinating Council, and that's essentially to look at, and this is something that we're seeing around the country, referred to as Justice Reinvestment, to look at how can we reduce spending on corrections and reinvest those monies in strategies to increase public safety and reduce recidivism. And that looks like it will pass. It passed both houses, and hopefully the governor will sign that legislation. And so that's a start because that creates a coordinating entity that will bring people together to have these conversations. And so I hope that one of the things they talk about, for example, is, well, is it best to have people in prison for many, many years beyond their 50th birthday? Or can we look at that in a different way? So I'm encouraged at least by that possibility in Annapolis. There's some other things that we wish would have happened in Annapolis this year that look like they're not going to, and that's unfortunate.
All right, Mark. Well, I'm glad you did this report for that reason. I think that's the value of it. The bigger question, it might be beyond the JPI's interest here, is looking at the investment in that particular community over the last 25 years, and why there isn't a greater payoff in terms of, improving people's lives, the personal growth in the people who lived in Sandtown, Winchester, still too many of them going to prison. And we're going to be talking about that in the next segment of the show. We're also going to be speaking with two leaders in the Sandtown community and hear about their efforts to improve the lives of their neighbors, and specifically these ex-offenders returning to the community that Mark Schindler was just talking about. So, Mark, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Yep, Mark Schindler, Executive Director of the D.C.-based nonprofit, the Justice Policy Institute. You can read more about their report on the Dan Rodrick's Facebook page. A short break and more about Sandtown Winchester when we get back. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodrick's here. We're discussing Baltimore's Sandtown community in this hour of the show, the problems that persist there over the years, despite the millions that have been invested in order to fight poverty, improve housing, and reduce crime in the community. Now we get the perspective from Paul Marks. We invited him onto the show because Paul Marks wrote a book about Jim Rouse, who put so much time and energy into launching this big project in the 1990s to reclaim and renew Sandtown, Winchester. Our guest, Paul Marks, lives in Towson. He's the author of Jim Rouse, Capitalist Idealist, a book that was published a few years ago. And Paul, thank you for being on the show with us.
It's my pleasure, Dan.
You know, we should just give a little bit of the historic perspective here. Kurt Schmoke was mayor. It was Jim Rouse had, he developed Columbia, he developed Harbor Place and many other places. He established his Enterprise Foundation. And so why don't you describe for us his vision for Sandtown and why he chose Sandtown Winchester?
Well, for a long time, Jim Rouse was, I would use the word, disgusted by the disparity that he observed in the lives of the rich in this country and the lives of the poor. He was absolutely committed to transforming the lives of the poor, not only in Baltimore, but across the country. It is unbelievable the commitment that he made to accomplishing this. Unfortunately, his life was cut a little bit too short, and he was not finished with the job in Sandtown. But on the other hand, as I've been thinking about this problem, the high per capita number of prisoners that come out of Sandtown and indeed most of West Baltimore, I don't know what the answer is, except that there might be something going on in the culture of young people in these communities, which leads to crimes that really never should take place. I'm astounded to read the number of stories in The Sun from day to day about black-on-black shootings. I'm astounded to read on so many occasions that there are parties being held, large parties, and at these parties, arguments break out, and then shooting breaks out. I think the ultimate solution to this problem has to be in the culture and in the type of education that is being offered to young people. I think preschool education is very, very important. Got to get the young people off on the right foot. I don't know what can be done beyond what has been done in the way of providing social services. And also housing. Jim Rouse believed that housing came number one. In order for people to enjoy their lives, there must be some way for people to have adequate housing or even somewhat better than adequate housing at prices that could be afforded. And he did a lot about that, and that part of his program, I would say, has been successful.
We should, Paul, yeah. We should mention there, since you brought up housing, 200 new homes that went up in Sandtown, Winchester. Brick row homes, those went up. Older homes were rehabbed. It's not like nothing was done there. A lot was done there.
A lot was done, right.
Yeah.
So you can't blame it on inadequate housing as a cause of criminality. I mean, a lot was done to provide better housing and better social services.
Paul, I want to ask you a question. Something, yeah. A reflection you made about Jim Rouse when it came to Sandtown Winchester.
Yeah.
You said that he became a bit disillusioned with the personal grievances people had. In the neighborhood seemed to be preoccupied with personal grievances. They found it difficult to focus on the bigger issues in the long term.
Right.
Do you want to expand upon that a little bit?
He was looking towards the long term. He was interested in what that community might be like 10 years down the road. But a lot of the people he had to deal with were interested in what could be done next week. And so that discouraged him a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think it's a lost cause? I mean, I wanted to ask you
No, I do not think it's a lost cause. But I think we have to look at how young people are growing up to be knuckleheads and thinking that if they break the law, that doesn't matter. It's only a petty law. And behavior like that becomes contagious. And we get into all sort of complications, like the police shooting business that we have across the country today. The guy in South Carolina, okay, he was stopped for a broken light. On the road with a broken light, he probably is aware that he might be stopped, or he should be aware that he might be stopped. But he gets stopped, and some kind of dispute breaks out, and it ends up with a guy being shot. I mean, the policeman is totally off base in trying to resolve the problem by shooting after somebody running away. But however, the man apparently had a police record. He didn't want to be stopped by the police, but he drove with a broken light anyway.
Listen, Paul, I will say, if the point you're trying to make is you want to reduce confrontations between young men on the street and the police, I don't know if the South Carolina example is such a good example of that. So maybe we ought to stick with Sandtown Winchester today.
Okay.
But listen, I appreciate your comments on that very much. Paul Marx, whose book is Jim Rouse, Capitalist/Idealist. Thanks for joining us.
Bye-bye.
We turn now to the present and future of Sandtown. Here with me in Studio A are two lifelong Sandtown residents who've been working to improve the lives of their neighbors through job training, support groups, and some improvement projects we'll hear about in this segment of the show. Antoine Bennett, nice to have you in the studio with us, Antoine.
Yes.
Antoine is a former Open Society Institute fellow.
That's correct.
And you used your fellowship to grow this organization called Men of Valuable Action. I like
That's
this.
Correct.
A MOVA. We have a MOVA in West Baltimore.
Yes,
and so you'll get to tell us about that. Thanks for being here. And
thanks for having me.
Elder Clyde Harris. Clyde Harris is pastor of the Newborn Community Faith Church. Did I get the full title of your church?
Absolutely.
It's nice to have you. You're a bit of a celebrity.
Certainly.
It seems like when anybody does a story about Sandtown Winchester, they turn to you because you've been there for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And you are also involved with
Martha's Place.
Which is a homeless and drug recovery center for women.
Yes.
Also in Sandtown.
Yes.
And there's one other organization, Strength to Love
2.
What is Strength to Love 2, by the way?
Strength to Love 2 is an organization that supports returning citizens from incarceration.
Okay, so we're gonna talk about returning citizens here.
Mm-hmm.
Or I use the term ex-offenders, but you use returning citizens. So first of all, let me go to Clyde Harris on this.
Mm-hmm.
What if you describe for our listeners what life has been like in Sandtown, Winchester, since over the time that we're talking about here, when Mr. Rouse came in, the Nehemiah Project, Mayor Schmoak, Build, they were all involved in that starting in the 90s.
I first like to start off by saying what inspired James Rouse was the leader, Gordon Cosby in Washington, D.C., Church of the Savior. James Rouse and I had the same spiritual leader, and that inspired him to work a social issue into trying to support communities of need. And they were also inspirational in starting Columbia.
So what did you think when he came in with this big project for Sandtown Winchester? New houses, tear down an old bakery, put up 200 houses?
Mm-hmm. I understood what he was doing. I was very inspired, and I was very much a part of that movement. But what it brought was a lot of outside support that received, to me, most of the finances. And to really be successful and supportive of a community, you have to start really at the grassroots. Work with those in the community and organizations that is working. And that's where you plant your seed and gradually allow the community to build itself.
Do you think that happened? Or are you saying it didn't happen enough?
We were able to watch other people perform, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, we are not a part of. It wasn't enough of us being a part of the resurrection of our community.
So building houses... Yes, good. You can't knock that, right?
Can't knock it.
Rehabbing houses.
Cannot knock it.
A good thing. Social services, education. What would you say about social services and education in
Well,
Sandtown?
The social service, we were a part of that because we had our own health center, New Song Health Center. We had our own health center, so we were a part of that also. But, you know, the...
What would you would say it improved? Services.
Service did improve, but... When the money leave, you know.
What do you mean when the money leave? When the money
so
left.
So we had, what is it, so many millions in that to come in our community.
Oh, that was invested, you mean?
In invested
I think
in
it's
our community.
More than $100 million.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know.
Something like that. So
when you look, if you come into our community, it, as they say in our community, where is that?
Well, it's in the houses, no? You could that's one part of it.
We have two. We built ourselves in your community on your block.
27.
Habitat for Humanity has built 27 homes.
Mm-hmm.
In your block alone.
I'm saying that's tangible. You can look at it and say there's the money. It didn't all leave the community.
No, it didn't all leave the community, but it certainly wasn't $100 million.
Antoine, I want to get your view of this, too. How old are you, by the way?
I'm a young 43-year-old.
Okay, so you were in your, late teens, early 20s when this was going on, when this first got started?
That's true. Actually, I was, to be precise and concise, I was actually incarcerated.
You were incarcerated when you were how old?
During inception. I just turned 18 years of age.
Okay, and this was for a pretty serious crime, right?
It was.
It was
mm-hmm.
for a
attempted murder in the first degree.
Attempted mm-hmm. murder, and you were sentenced to how many years in prison?
30 years to spend all but 10. My first big trip away from home.
Okay. Yeah, your first big trip away from home. So that you were one of those young men from Sandtown Winchester who ended up incarcerated.
Yes.
So you weren't around when this project got launched in the 90s.
I did not. So I miss a greater part of the inception.
I wonder if you would talk about when you finally got home.
Mm-hmm.
What year was that, by the way?
It would have been winter, early 1993.
93. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So this was getting started and rolling when you got home.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So give us, I mean, your perception of, you heard Elder Harris here, mm-hmm. your perception of it. What happened in that was good? What happened that was missing? And how do we get to where we have so many young guys from Sandtown Winchester still sure. doing as you did, going away to prison?
Well, I think one of the, certainly is a few noteworthy things. Certainly the housing, home ownership, it being a part of our very vocabulary in our community. Of course, I've been a lifelong resident of Sandtown. I've seen the nadir, the lowest point of the community, to where I would say we're not at the zenith, and it's not a community that is completely healthy in a lot of respects, but we are certainly far away from where I remember growing up, where it appeared that every other house was dilapidated and empty and with busted windows and, you know, to a point now where you see whole blocks, such as the block I live on, that are completely renovated, re-renovated, and have homeowners. And I think one of the significant things that Habitat did over its two plus decades, is that it allowed lifelong residents, so people who have been there for decades, to become homeowners and own a piece of the rock in their very community. And I don't know if Mr. Paul Marks and other folks who are not necessarily eye level to the problems, the challenges, and also the struggle in Sandtown actually get a chance to see from a 30,000-foot viewpoint.
Yeah, I think he acknowledges that mm-hmm. some of those good things happened,
yes.
but he's looking at this report from the Justice Policy Institute
sure.
about incarceration rate.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that for a minute.
Sure.
Because you look at that and you say, well, that sounds like all the effort we went into Sandtown, Winchester was an abject failure when you have the highest per capita incarceration sure. rate in the state of Maryland.
Sure.
So what is your response to that?
Well, being an ex-offender myself, I certainly can speak anecdotally from the viewpoint that I didn't know how to connect to the resources in my community, how limited they were, and trying to figure out, contrary to belief, however you want to turn this thing on its head and turn it back over, you still have a lot of young men. You have young men in our community who really are lost. And that sounds very cliche and banal, but they really are. They don't know how to connect.
They're lost, meaning they're like, what, how old, 18, 20 years old?
Yes.
They dropped out of school?
Dropping out of high school, or education system that seems to spend a lot of time talking about the success of other groups and race as opposed to the accomplishments that we have helped contribute to society, this country. And so you begin to try to figure out in your own way, well, what are some of the things that I'm connected to? Hereditarily, and you don't see that, and you don't know where to get that, and so you tend to live out the thoughts that come in your mind. Many of our young folks are living a survivalist mentality. Everyone who has crossed the threshold of MOVA, we take very seriously. When they say to us that they want to take care of themselves and their families, we take them at that, at face value, because we truly believe that they want to live a good and productive life. Just like that next person, the person who were in a more affluent neighborhood. And so that's the premise that we operate off of.
Antoine,
and it does make a difference.
Antoine, I want to hear more about what sure. you do there in Sandtown, Winchester, when we get back, as well as Clyde Harris, pastor of the Newborn Community Faith Church, is with us for this segment of Midday. Antoine Bennett, who was just speaking, he founded the organization Men of Valuable Action, the MOVA of West Baltimore. Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a little break. We'll come back and we'll hear more about your efforts in Sandtown, Winchester. If you have a question for our guests, the way to reach us is by phone, 410-662-8780. Send an email with a comment or question. I'll read it on the air, midday@wypr.org. A short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday as we talk about Sandtown, Winchester, a community that saw lots of effort starting in the 1990s at renewal, rehabilitation, new housing. Really was something that was widely talked about and got a lot of press coverage in the 90s. James Rouse leading the way at the time. He had retired as CEO of his company and worked on this project through the Enterprise Foundation. He had the Baltimore United in Leadership Development build involved, Mayor Schmoke, of course, and the part of the project that had to do with housing was called the Nehemiah Project, Nehemiah Program, taken from the Old Testament, the prophet who rebuilt Jerusalem, right,
yes.
the destroyed city
the
of Jerusalem. I was going to say, listening to Antoine Bennett, Elder Harris, who's a little younger than you, it's the young guys who are the toughest to work with. The returning citizens, you mean the ex-offenders,
yes.
who come back, they have come back to Sandtown from their own, from prison, have their own problems.
Yes.
But they're generally, would you say, I'm asking you generalities here, a little more earnest about getting on track again and staying out of trouble.
Yes. When you talk of the age difference, what they need are examples. Antoine and myself, we are indigenous to the community. When they see him and myself doing positive things and making changes, they then themselves become hopeful that someone is believing in them, and it's someone that looked like me,
mm-hmm.
that raised in our community, that can make a difference. And that is how we are able to turn them around. And a lot of them have went to our schools. We know them, and we try our best to turn the ship.
Can you talk about the biggest problems they face, Antoine Bennett, coming home from prison?
Sure, it's that maladjustment period, that period where you want to make up for lost time, but at the same time, you want to be productive. And, of course, their productivity starts with gainful employment. But like myself, when I came home, there was I was in between jobs, but nothing really that would encourage a career-based opportunity.
Yeah, you were always in between a job.
Always in between.
Yeah, what kind of jobs did you get when you first got? Do you remember?
I became dishwasher. Worked mm-hmm. for a dishwasher. Did labor in the construction field. Things that really put me to work, but of course, allowing me to sustain some type of housing. It was impossible, and so it was frustrating.
A question about housing. Ex-offenders, or you refer to them again as returning citizens to mm-hmm. Sandtown Winchester. What kind of housing issues do they face? Not all of them have families that want them back, right?
That's correct. And for most part, many come home feeling like strangers to their very community, strangers to their very households that they used to call home. And some have burnt a lot of bridges prior to returning home. And so it's that challenge, which is all a part of the maladjustment period. And so we don't talk about homelessness, pillar-to-post situations as it relates to our young folk who are coming home, or ex-offenders or returning citizens. We don't look at that. We still are very much a society that is about crime and punishment, crime fighting, as opposed to helping to change the trajectory, personal trajectory of these young folks. How do we take them from ex-cons to icons is what I want to talk about.
Give them $40 and put them on a bus in Hagerstown and send them back to Baltimore
yes,
is pretty much all we do. Although they do get some training, some vocational training in prison. Did you have any when you were?
I did, and actually it stopped just before I came home. I had all types of training and I obtained my GED there. I got what they call job readiness workshops that was eliminated for quite a long time and only have been recently re-implemented in the systems, which makes a difference.
That's Antoine Bennett from Men of Valuable Action, and Clyde Harris is the pastor of Newborn Community Faith Church. Before we go to the phone lines and take a couple calls,
mm-hmm.
Pastor Harris, what do you think Sandtown needs? If James Rouse was still around here, and if he hadn't died, if he was here and you could speak to him and you'd say, I'm back, I want to help you, the ghost of James Rouse, what would you say to him about Sandtown?
Well, I said, direct your resources to those who are in the community who are doing something, who you can depend on, and start slow with the people who are in the community and allow them to work. Allow them to learn and allow them to build.
And that wasn't done the first time.
That wasn't done the first
time. They built houses, but there wasn't enough of that.
It wasn't enough of
I get what you're saying.
Real community input to really make a difference.
One other thing before we go to the phones. Ted Rouse, we should talk about him, the mm-hmm. son of James Rouse.
Mm-hmm.
You have a farm in Sandtown.
Yes, and we are working closely together as partners.
This is a vacant lot that's turned into a hoop houses.
Absolutely, about an acre and a half.
It's part of the big city farm of Ted Rouse's creation.
Yes, and ours is Strength of Love 2.
Excuse me?
Strength of Love 2 Farms.
Oh, that's your group
that's our group.
For your for ex-offenders returning citizens.
Yes, that's right.
So they work on the on growing
the farm,
things?
Yes.
Excellent. That's Elder Clyde Harris from Newborn Community Faith Church. We'll go to the phone lines, take a couple of calls. Pete in Baltimore, welcome to Midday.
Hi. You're talking about most of my life here. I spent about 35 years in Baltimore working on stuff like this. I was a community organizer, a prosecutor in housing court, a social worker in treatment foster care, taught at Coppin criminal justice and penology. And I just have to salute your guests for their efforts and what they've done what the elders said, I think, is really, really important. You got to work with the people who are really there doing something, and work with them, let them grow into it, not just try and dump projects in the community. The other thing that I want to say is that you can't isolate a zip code and try and make it a model, because the people in that neighborhood are swimming in a sea of racism. It's in the air that we all breathe. The cultural message that goes to especially young black men, that they don't matter, that they can't do it, and stuff like that, you can't wall that out, and we have to have a national effort, and it's going to have to go on for decades, that we have to fight racism. We have to do it on all levels, the local level that you're dealing with, but it has to be everywhere. It can't just be Rouse and some people in Sandtown working on it, and the people sitting out in the suburbs kind of having nothing to do with it, and every once in a while saying, okay, what'd you do with our money? Did it make any difference? It has to be everybody in the society involved, or it just won't work. And the whole thing comes down to treating every person like they're a real human being, whether they're an addict, whether they're in jail, whatever they're doing. And this message that we're living in a society that is just insanely mean-spirited, all these attacks on Obama that he doesn't belong, this kind of stuff was just racism from the start. And we need to say clearly that everybody needs to be on board, or it just doesn't, you're swimming upstream all the time.
Pete, appreciate your comments. Thanks very much. More comments here by email from John, who the subject line on his email is, "Nothing stops a bullet like a job."
Yes.
The founder of Homeboys Industries in L.A. came up with that phrase.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. John writes, "Unemployment is devastating to human dignity. Ex-offenders find it very hard to secure decent jobs. So mass incarceration creates its own self-fulfilling problems, including clogged courts, recidivism, and angry, frustrated people. Good jobs can provide the income that people need to afford decent housing, create the demand for groceries to eliminate food deserts, and solve many of the other problems that afflict Sandtown and many other city neighborhoods." Our email address, again, midday@wypr.org. Jobs. You know, I have friends who work in poverty in Baltimore for forever, for 30, 40 years, and they keep coming back to that. You know, we need jobs that pay a decent wage, a living wage, better than that, to replace all those jobs we lost 50, 60 years ago when we started losing heavy industries, right? What do we see in Sandtown, Winchester, or just nearby when it comes to jobs? Does anybody work locally? Does everybody have to take a bus or drive somewhere?
We have to take bus. When you say drive somewhere, assuming
somebody owns a car, right?
As soon as, I'm sorry. Yeah, but primarily bus.
There's no jobs nearby? Or
no,
they're downtown, maybe?
No,
downtown?
No, there isn't. And us directing our attention to returning citizens from incarceration, we use the Delancey Street Project. And the Delancey Street Project housed these returning citizens and trained them to start their own businesses. And so that is what we are duplicating in Sandtown, working with my cousin is a general contractor, Les Gross, and we are working together so that we could train in HVACR, farming, landscaping.
Right, right.
These are the things that we are doing now.
Antoine, what goes on at Men of Valuable Action? What exactly do you guys do? When do you meet and what do you do?
Well, we engage the men who are ex-offenders, dad, and high school dropouts. And, of course, job development and resume development and mentorship all takes place in that.
Do they all want to stay in Sandtown, Winchester?
It's home.
That's
it's
their home.
They do.
So you're sort of like rebuilding human beings who've been away for prison, and do you think they're committed to staying in the community?
I think they are. I think that Sandtown is in a place where we have to consider the fact that more than brick and mortar need to be rehabilitated. I think that over the last two decades, the physical development of the community, even though we have some ways to go, is obvious. And I think we're in a place now where we really have to work on the people, and particularly the most disenfranchised people that I find in our community are the ex-offenders, the young men, the young dads, the high school dropouts. I remember a gentleman quoting a gentleman who said, you know, this idea of giving a man a fish, he's for a day, teach him how to fish, he'll live for a lifetime. Well, we want to take it a step further. We want to teach him how to own the pond. And so the email that quoted Father Greg Boyle in L.A., which says nothing stops a bullet like a job,
yeah.
He has this work where you live philosophy, and so he's taking these ex-gang members, sort of like with the Delancey Street Project, and then allowing them to build up the place that they call home, and that's what we're certainly interested in doing and are doing, trying to create more job and job ownership and proprietors
right.
out of these same group
right.
of people. Human capital is very important.
Well, I like
excellent
to say
idea.
This. I like to say this. If they do leave, it's a win-win situation. We are training our kids. We have our own elementary school. Between our two organizations, we have our own elementary school, New Song Learning Center. And we're training our kids to be the future leaders of our community. But if they do leave, as I have forestated, it's a win-win situation.
It's win-win because you know they're a solid citizen.
They're
going to do fine.
Absolutely positive.
Yeah. Let's take another call. Eric in Sandtown. We're down to our last couple of minutes, Eric, so you have it. Go right ahead.
Yes. Thank you very much. And congratulations to the pastor and Brother Bennett. I pastor at Metropolitan United Methodist Church, just coming back there in January, but I grew up in Holland Park till the age of 33 and watched community go from business owners and domestics and business and professionals all living together to what it is now. And both have hit it right on the head. While there was renovations and rebuildings, new buildings taking place, there was no job training that empowered people to be able to work after they move into homes to rent or homes to buy. So job training for job to get jobs is very important. The education is still an issue, of course, and recreation is done. Holland Park Recreation was open for a variety of activities with a variety of different adults there for young girls, young boys that helped to keep us on point. And as Brother Antoine talked about in the those who are incarcerated, all across the state, as all of us know, that there's a lot of furnishings that are made by people who are incarcerated. At Morgan University, I sat on some of the most beautifully upholstered furnishings that were made by people that were still incarcerated. When they come out of, come back to the community, they're not able to get jobs at furniture companies and other things because of records, you know, their criminal past, which they should have paid the price for. But I look
forward
to working with
thank you.
With the elders.
Yeah, I'm sorry we ran out of time there. That's Eric King, pastor at Metropolitan United Methodist. So thank you for that. And yeah, that's interesting what he said about state industries and building of furniture.
Absolutely.
It'd be nice if we had a furniture factory in Sandtown, maybe,
well,
or somewhere.
I do know one that's on the east side
yeah.
that has returning citizens.
And they hire there. Ex-offenders?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, good luck with this. I'd like to come out and visit both of you.
Absolutely. We'd be
sir.
Proud.
We'll get a chance to do that. Antoine Bennett.
Best kept secret in Baltimore.
Yeah, okay. Which one? Yours or Antoine's?
Both of us. We work together.
Antoine Bennett runs the Men of Valuable Action based in Sandtown, Winchester, where he grew up. And Clyde Harris, Elder Harris, is pastor of Newborn Community Faith Church in Sandtown.
Yeah.
Also, he runs Martha's Place, and his program for ex-offenders or returning citizens is Strength to Love, too. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, and we have lunch from Eddie's of Roland Park, so please grab a sandwich, a delicious sandwich from Eddie's of Roland Park. Thanks to Eddie's for providing lunch for our guests. Please stay tuned for the news, everybody. We'll have the second hour of midday right after that.